Welcome to this podcast from Christchurch London. For more information and resources, please go to christchurchlondon.org.
To whip it out. 1 Samuel 3, 1 to 11. The boy Samuel ministered before the Lord under Eli. In those days, the word of the Lord was rare. There were not many visions. One night, Eli, whose eyes were becoming so weak that he could barely see, was lying down in his usual place. The lamp of God had not yet gone out, and Samuel was lying down in the house of the Lord, where the ark of God was. Then the Lord called Samuel. Samuel answered, "Here I am." And he ran to Eli and said, "Here I am. You called me." But Eli said, "I did not call you. Go back and lie down." So he went and lay down. Again, the Lord called Samuel. And Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am. You called me." "My son," Eli said, "I did not call. Go back and lie down." Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord. The word of the Lord had not been revealed to him. A third time the Lord called, "Samuel." And Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am. You called me." Then Eli realized that the Lord was calling the boy. So Eli told Samuel, "Go and lie down. And if he calls you, say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening.'" So Samuel went and lay down in his place. The Lord came and stood there, calling as the other times, "Samuel, Samuel." Then Samuel said, "Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening." And the Lord said to Samuel, "See, I am about to do something in Israel that will make the ears of everyone who hears about it tingle." Guys, please welcome Dave Stroud to the stage.
Oh, good morning, everyone. Thank you, Joel, very much. How are you all? Yes. Excellent. Really nice to be here. And this is the second part of the series that we started last week. Liam did a great start, The Power of a Whisper. When I started my first church, my sending pastor and mentor of the time asked me to agree that I would do it for just 5 years. He said, "Do it for 5 years," and then he said, "Go somewhere else and do it all over again." And that wasn't just a suggestion or an encouragement, so it was somewhat stronger than that. I was very happy with that. I'd found myself starting my first church in my hometown. I'd been raised there and frankly was keen to go anywhere else for other reasons, which we'll get to later. I was to do this in my hometown, so I said, "Yes, super idea. 5 years it is." 5 years went amazingly quickly, and in the run-up to that fifth anniversary, I started praying and asking the Lord whether or where we should be going. And over a period of time, three short, sharp sentences developed in my spirit, which were somewhat surprising to me. They were these words: stay put, commit, and it's for Middle England. Now, the first thing to say about this was the last thing that I wanted to do. I did not want to stay put. To commit didn't just mean a geographic location, but it meant something of the heart. And so I wrestled with this sense for some time, but it was so strong and so enduring, or repeating, if you like, that I remember clearly, though it was some time ago now, sitting opposite Philippa, my wife, one evening and saying, "I think we need to stay, and I would suggest we expect to be here until we have raised our children, until they have left home, and then maybe we will get to reconsider whether we go somewhere else or not." And I remember, to my surprise, her saying, "Yep." Decision made, the only job left to do was go and speak to sending pastor. Frankly, the conversation didn't go well. He was tense, and I could tell that he was thinking, "You, Stroud, are reneging on our agreement." And the game changer was the moment that I actually mentioned the words "Middle England," which changed his whole composure. He said, "Wow," he said. A month ago, he said, he'd been on holiday, and he said, "I sensed this very surprising whisper in my heart." And the whisper went something like this: ask God for 50 churches in the Midlands. We're right in the southern part of the Midlands, really, We're based in Bedford. Asked me for 50 churches in the next 5 years. And he said, I've been praying about this and I think this is the right thing to do. And he said, in the light of what you've just said, David, I want you to help me. It turned out that those next 5 years were some of the most memorable and life-changing for me of my life and of my ministry. We drove thousands of miles. We started a whole pile of churches and had a whole gamut of experiences that I'm extremely grateful for and would have never had otherwise. To be honest, looking back, I'm not only grateful that I received that sense of direction, but slightly scared that if I hadn't been listening, I might have missed something that proved to be so fundamental, so important for my life. And if for you it's a somewhat weird idea to think that God might communicate with men and women in these sort of ways today, then you need to know that whilst my experience for me was relatively unusual, I was within the company of countless thousands of men and women down the centuries, and many, many men and women right through the pages of Scripture who said, I changed my plans, I did something differently, I said something different, I reacted in a different way. Because somewhere deep inside, I sensed that that was the right thing to do. I heard a whisper from heaven. I mean, you know, you don't get through very many pages of the Old Testament before this sort of thing starts to happen. Abraham leaves the land he knows, not knowing where he's going, because he feels he should. Noah builds an ark without apparently a cloud in the sky. Noah, why are you building a boat in the middle of dry land? Joshua marches for 7 days round a city. Joshua, when has anyone marched 7 days round a city and it's worked out before? No good answer to that question, but the earthquake that precedes it means the walls fall down. David declines the honor that any king would take to build the temple. He just does all the hard work and prepares it, and his son gets to do it. And all those men would have said, they just happened to be men. We'll get to that in a minute, actually. But all those men said, wasn't my idea. Heard a whisper. Changed my plans. Then we get to the Gospels. And the Gospels are the center of the Scriptures. Not surprised. The Son of God revealed to us. And he says, I can't do anything unless the Father's already doing it. And I only do what I see the Father doing. Sounds pretty dependent in the right sense of the word. Interdependent. Relying on the Father. Up until this point in time, it has essentially been special people who've got to do special things on special occasions. That's okay if you're a special person. But looking around this room, I don't think too many of us would count ourselves in that category. So it's really rather good news when the Holy Spirit gets poured out. And Peter stands up and he quotes an Old Testament prophet and he says, now all of us, regardless of gender or age, will get to hear. Women and men, old and young, we're all in the game now. That's a big deal, and that's good news. So that's one theme. One theme is he's always speaking. There's another theme in Scripture. And this one you might identify with more than the first one. That is, man, men and women miss it the whole time. Moses is in the desert, arid, hot. Bushfires are not unusual in the desert. In fact, they happen the whole time. Things catch on fire because it's hot. It's not really noteworthy. Moses is going past a bush, it's on fire. He almost misses it, almost misses the point. Because, you know, it's just a bushfire. But then he looks at it and he notices that this bush is on fire and it's not burning up. So he goes over to it and he pays attention to it. And before long, he's handing in his shepherd job. And he's got a big job. He's got to go and get all his people out from under the tyrannical regime of Egypt. Boy Samuel, Joel read about just a few minutes ago. Samuel has absolutely no categories for hearing anything other than human voices. So when he is lying in bed in the temple and he hears a voice, he assumes it's got to be the elderly priest Eli. So he goes to see him. Eli, what do you want? I didn't say anything, Samuel. Go back to bed. He does it again. And, one imagines Eli's answers are getting shorter. Bed. Final time, Eli, realizing he's not going to win this one any other way, says, maybe, because this sort of thing didn't happen too much at that time, but he said, maybe you should go back and say, speak, Lord, your servant's listening. And that was a total game changer for Samuel. Rather than thinking that this was just a human thing happening, to change to a prayer, God, if you want anything of me or you want to say anything to me, I'm here, was the beginning of the rest of his life with an entirely different trajectory to his life than the one that he'd lived up until then. But he didn't recognize it to start with. Disciples are dejected. Jesus has been crucified. He's actually alive again, but they've not worked it out yet. Theme. They're on the road to Emmaus. Jesus joins two of them and they walk. It would imply for miles together. But they don't work out who he is. Even though it's a profound and powerful experience, their hearts burn within them, still don't realize who it is. I wonder how many of us identify with that. I wonder how many of us would put ourselves in the Moses, Samuel, disciples on the road to Emmaus category. I would. So what I want to look at this morning is, how do we recognize his voice? How do we get in the first category rather than the second category? Let me just say two things before we do that. The first thing is this. If you have got big problems with what I've said so far, and you wouldn't be the first person to have that experience, but if you are like, I cannot work out how God could possibly communicate with man, then I'd like to point you towards Liam's talk from last week, because that's exactly the subject that he handles. And you can download and listen to that. You may, though, have another question, which is, David, this whole subject scares me because I've got friends or I've read about people who've just done stupid, silly things. I mean, this sort of thing can get really out of hand. How do I know? And how, why, and when should I trust such things? Well, if you feel like that, I want to point you towards next week's sermon, when I will be talking about exactly that. So this is very much, you can't just listen to this sermon alone. You need to understand what we've said, and you need to wait for what we're going to say to get the whole picture. With that said, let's reflect a bit on this story that Joel read us about the boy Samuel. Let's see what we can understand. And let's see how this helps us to recognize whispers. The first thing that strikes me is that it is all about relationship. I mean, that, I guess, is not too surprising. The boy Samuel is in the temple. The temple is the iconic building of ancient Israel. That's where God dwells. I mean, he dwells in heaven, but he also dwells on earth. If he dwells anywhere particular, it's in the temple. And what do people do when they go to the temple? They pray and they worship. And in later times, they read the Torah or some of the Old Testament. They read, they worship, they pray. It's the basis of relationship. And of course, relationship always precedes any depth of communication. You know that. I remember as a teenager, for some reason, my left ankle used to click when I went upstairs. And I remember often I would go upstairs. My little sister would be in bed early, sort of 9 o'clock. Her light's out. She's lying in bed, awake, but done what she's been told. Her door's wide open. I walk upstairs. I don't say anything, but I hear this voice floating down the landing. Hello, David. Because we had a close relationship and she knew what to listen for to know that I was coming. And when we have a close relationship, it changes everything. Now, here's the good news is you don't have to have a relationship to start with to hear the whispers of the Lord. At least according to verse 7. Because it says that even here Samuel, verse 7, did not know the Lord. So if you say, this relationship thing beats me, haven't got that one worked out yet, that's okay. Actually, you could tell the whole story in terms of you grow in relationship by hearing the promptings of the Spirit and responding to them. Just say yes. You'll grow in relationship. Actually, any relationship grows when most of the time you say yes. One of my daughters, when she was growing up, had this habit. She'd just wake up some days and she'd go, nicked. And that was just a way. She'd just go, no. You could suggest just about anything and she would say no. I mean, it didn't seem to matter. But consequently, relationship doesn't really thrive in that situation, does it? Exactly. So you have to say yes more often. And you grow in relationship through developing a habits in your life. I mean, just think back to the first time that you fell in love and that was reciprocated. Now, what happens at that point? Your habits in your life change. Rather than going home immediately you finished work, you go and meet the man or woman you've fallen in love with. And so things start to change. You make space for what's become important. Well, it's not dissimilar in the spiritual life. Is that as you start to want to grow in a relationship with God, habits change. And you want to read the scriptures, and you want to pray, and you want to worship. And you need to work out how they become habits in your life. Because as they become habits, a relationship grows. And you find that as a relationship grows, so the whispers of the Spirit come from time to time. It's actually not long ago that we started 3 new services here at Christchurch, only about 8 weeks or so ago, something in that order, maybe slightly more. But I remember in the run-up to it, I remember one morning just feeling extremely stressed. I had about half a dozen decisions to make that day, and basically I was not going to win with any of them. You know, every one of those decisions, some people were going to go, yeah, and other people were going to go, I hate it, or hate you, or something. And I remember as I started my time of prayer that morning, just I felt listless, energyless, fed up. Who wants to do this? And as I was praying, the thing that kept coming to my mind was Joshua chapter 1. Joshua chapter 1 kept coming to mind. I thought, no, I'm praying. Joshua chapter 1, Joshua chapter 1. So I turned to Joshua chapter 1. I think we were going to preach on it this follow that coming Sunday, or we'd just done so. And I read it again, and some of you are familiar with the content. Be strong and courageous is the theme, to summarize. Be very strong and courageous. Do everything I've told you. Be strong, be courageous. And as I read it, I could feel just like this strength and this power coming into my heart. And I could feel my head lifting and just getting reminded, David, self-pity never helped anyone. This is an incredible privilege to lead and to get to make the decisions that come with leadership. Get on with it, and get on with it with strength and with courage. And I powered out of my prayer room that morning, and I couldn't wait to get to life. And what had happened? I was a habit of prayer and scripture reading, and within that, my heart got reshaped in the sort of way that it should. I want to encourage us all here. You could say, what's a church? A church is a community of men and women growing in relationship with God. That's what we do. Well, I want to encourage you. Develop habits of prayer, Bible reading, and worship. It's one of the reasons it's so important for us to be together like this. And as we do so, from time to time, we'll hear the whispers, the nudgings, and the directions of the Spirit. That's the first thing that I noticed in this passage. The second thing is that it's entirely unexpected. Samuel is not expecting to hear the voice of God as he is lying there. And the truth is that for many of us, I think we miss important moments because we're simply either we're not expecting a moment or we're not expecting what we hear, or we don't want to hear what we're going to hear. So I think, as I implied or said earlier, as I was growing up, the anticipation in my household for all the children was that we would go to university and not return to our hometown. I don't think it was just my parents' cunning plan for getting us to move out promptly at the end of university. It was their general encouragement, go and explore the world. So to me, it was entirely unexpected and very surprising that every time it came to a university holiday, I felt myself drawn back to my hometown. Whenever my friends went away for a weekend to do something exciting, I found it was like this magnet. I couldn't explain it. I just knew I needed to be back there with that church. And over time, this desire to start a new church developed in the center of town amongst the poor and the young and those who didn't have any church in that area that they could access the good news. Having graduated from university, I went abroad for a year. And 6 months into that time, I remember being with a friend. I was out in Hong Kong. We were crossing a road when a friend of mine said, "So what are you doing when you finish here?" And as I explained that I had to go back to Bedford, to my hometown, this church needed starting, I found myself crying to my embarrassment. So I turned the other way, you know, try to make sure that nobody else saw it. And I thought, what is going on? And then I thought, well, maybe this is a reflection on how God feels. Maybe these unexpected emotions and sometimes these pullings, these desires, these passions in our heart, maybe that's the Spirit's direction. Maybe that's what he was wanting at this point in time. And it was because of that that took me to take what you could technically call, if you like, a downwardly mobile step of returning to my hometown and being there for the next 10 years. I'm so grateful that I did. Are there unexpected whispers, or is the content unexpected and unwanted in your heart today? Out of relationship, unexpected in the night. Samuel heard in the night. And the most common way that across and through the Bible that we hear the whispers of God in the night is actually through our dreams. When you read the Bible's assumption is not that our dreams are simply the result of an overactive or fertile imagination, but that sometimes at least there's more to it than that. Some of you are from cultures and backgrounds where this is very normal and you get very confused. In the environment that we're in now, which just, you know, poo-poos all of that. But actually Joseph, he of the technicolored dream coat fame, Daniel and the lion's den, Joseph, the father of Jesus, Paul the apostle, all had dreams that really mattered at different times. It's worth just paying attention to your dreams. One of the things I've been doing over the last year or so is consulting with a network of 70, 80 churches in the UK. It basically requires me to spend a day a term with their, or 24 hours a term with their senior leadership team. And it's been a huge privilege to do. And I do not take the opportunity to do that lightly in any sense at all. But if I'm honest with you, at the same time, I've been from time to time thinking, should I really be doing this? Is this really the right thing? I mean, do you ever have those sort of feelings? I've got so much. I know I should be. Should I be doing this bit or not? So I'm praying that on the way, time before last, that I went to be with them. So we have the first evening together. The next morning, I'm joining them all for breakfast. And one guy comes down and he just stands opposite me at the table. He says, "Ha!" He said, "I had a dream about you last night." I said, "Oh, really?" He said, "Yeah, it wasn't anything." Went off to get his hash browns. Came back and sat down. And I said, "So what was the dream?" Oh, he said, "It was nothing." I said, "No, go on. What was the dream?" He said, "Well," he said, "you and I were at Lord's watching cricket." Well, I don't know whether he knew that, but this is like one of my favorite places in the whole world, so this got my attention. I've just lost half of you having said that, but there we go. And he said, you would sit alongside me for a while and then you'd disappear. He said, "Then you come back and sit alongside me for a while and then disappear. Then you..." He said, "This kept going on." And then he said, "Eventually," he said, "you were commentating on the whole game." "Silly, isn't it?" he said. I laughed. And then I thought, it's funny how in the Bible, dreams aren't what they seem. So seven cows aren't anything about seven cows. They're about 7 years. Seven heads of corn aren't about heads of corn. They're about 7 years. Statues of different metals are not about pieces of art. They're about empires. And you think, oh, well, maybe to understand dreams the way the Bible understands them, you have to deal with it symbolically, not literally. And I couldn't help but think that It was a great description of actually what my role is, to come and sit alongside and then to go. And that I wasn't meant to be there the whole time, but from time to time I was to come and sit alongside. And then I couldn't help but think that actually if you're going to commentate on a game, you've got to bring a much broader perspective and analysis than you do if you're just playing in the game. And I couldn't help but think maybe it's an answer to my prayer. Maybe it's a description of what I'm doing, and maybe it's an explanation of why I'm doing it, in order that I would have a broader perspective. It's worth listening to your dreams and starting to understand them, not literally, but trying to think in prayerful and thoughtful ways to see whether sometimes there's a whisper from heaven there. I'm struck too that here it's very ordinary the way that Samuel hears the Spirit. I mean, it's so ordinary he thinks it's Eli. Some of us, I think, would like to think, oh, if I'm going to hear a voice from heaven, there should be a crescendo, artillery fire, Beethoven's Ninth or something to prepare the way in the grandeur of what's going to happen. Well, any of those things, and Samuel would have must have thought differently, but he didn't. It just sounded like a man's voice. So he went to see whether it was Eli or not. Jeremiah was told one day, go down to the potter's house and watch the potter do work on his wheel with clay. An everyday scene at the time. And as Jeremiah does that, he goes down to the potter's house and he watches the wheel and the clay being made. He suddenly, what starts to develop in his heart is a message for the people. It's sort of rather anticlimactic. It's not, you know, a moment. It's just ordinary life. The prophet Amos takes it even further. At one point it says, the Lord says, what do you see? Amos says, I see a bowl of summer fruit. That's it. Ripe summer fruit. But as Amos looks at it prayerfully, he finds he has a message for the people. Sometimes it's all very ordinary. A friend of mine some years ago was going to start a new big project. Have you ever said yes to something and then wished you hadn't said yes? Well, this was my friend. This was just like, oh yeah, I'll do it. And then he, you know, once he said yes, he just thinks, this is way out of my league. I'm not sure that I stand much chance of pulling this off. And who knows, that insecurity and lack of confidence really affects how you perform. So anyway, just before he starts it, he goes out shopping to buy a pair of shoes. Ordinary thing. He buys the pair of shoes, he gets home, and he realizes, he tries them on, they fit perfectly, but then he looks at them, and they're half a size bigger than the shoes he normally wears. He thought, what's happening here? This is not 10, this is 10 and a half, but I don't take 10 and a half. He said, have my feet suddenly grown? Well, that is unlikely. I mean, maybe someone stamped the wrong size on them, or maybe this brand just measure things differently. But as he tried them on, realizing this, he heard this whisper in his heart. And the whisper said this, you're about to put a much bigger, you're about to step into a much bigger pair of shoes, but you'll find they fit perfectly. My friend says this strengthened and emboldened him for months afterwards. What happened? He bought a pair of shoes and they were the wrong size. That's all. No, at the same time, something much more profound, much more powerful, much deeper also happened. Do you remember how Liam said last week that maybe the Maker has tagged the universe so that signs of his presence and his direction are present within it? Well, my friend would certainly sign up to that. So we learn and we grow and we hear out of relationship. We hear unexpected messages. We hear them sometimes at night as well as in the day, often in very ordinary ways. But the other thing that we should, that this passage reminds us of, is simply that these promptings and these whispers are not always for ourselves, but they're sometimes for others. We didn't get time to read this next part of the story, but Eli actually comes to Samuel the next day and says, what did the Lord say? And Samuel didn't want to tell him because it wasn't good news. But that is, as they say, another story. The question I want to ask just as we come into land is this. How do I share these sorts of whispers and promptings with others, particularly given the general sense of reluctance or concern or questions about whether this sort of thing even happens today? How do we do that? How do we do that in a way that doesn't put people off, that doesn't cause people to retreat from the Maker, but draw towards the Maker? About 3 years ago now, Philip and I had a couple from our Christchurch London Council of Reference over for supper. We had a nice evening together, and just as they were going, one of the two turned to me and said, David, whenever I pray for you, I just keep finding myself thinking that London is the place for you in this next season of your life and ministry. No big claims. No, God has spoken to me and told me to tell you. Just as I was praying. But I knew exactly what they were saying. And I remember it now, 3 years later, because it is, in my opinion, it's right, it's true, and it was important for me to hear. Some people like to preface, and many of us have been brought up in a tradition where we preface this sort of thing with, God says. Does that help you if somebody comes to you in that way? God says. Or for some people it's like, really? Does he really? I want to suggest that actually the power is actually in the content of what's said, not in the preface to it. You know if this thing is for you and important because you feel it. It resonates with you. So my encouragement is to learn to listen and learn to share as naturally and as easily as possible. And that maybe some of the big claims that many of us, me included, have been raised with are possibly not the most helpful way in our secular world now to share these things in such a way that we get maximum listening and maximum steps towards the Father as a result. My encouragement today for all of us is that we go on an adventure and we say to the Spirit, we want to respond to the promptings that you have. I want to tell you one story in closing. Maybe the band could come back, please. Many of you will know Tim and Jackie Frisbee. They're actually leading our South service. And they were some of the founder members of Christ Church London. And Tim, we'd known each other for many years prior to the start of this church. And Tim and Jackie had always said to us, if you ever move to London to start a church, let us know. We'd love to come with you. So in the planning stage, I'm like, this is not something we can do by ourselves. We need others. So I pick up the phone. I call Tim. Tim is still a student. In his last year, Jackie's just started work. They've not got a bean between them. They have more debt than they have cash at this point in time, I think is the way they described it. So I call them and I say, hey, Tim, really exciting news. We're going to move to London to start this new church. We'd like you to come with us. He said, oh, wow. I said, listen, I'd like you to pray. You and Jackie, would you pray to see whether you feel this is the right thing to do? But I said, don't get into the practicalities of how you're going to afford to make this move. I said, just pray and see whether it's the right thing. So he did that. 10 days later, he's on the phone. David, he said, great news. He said, we're coming. I said, fabulous. I said, by the way, how are you going to afford it? He said, you told me not to ask that question. He said, we have no idea at all. And then a few weeks after that, Jackie is working in a small advertising agency in Reigate and Redhill between Brighton and London. And she gets a call one day. It's a guy on the phone. Hello, he said, we've been watching you. Which meant that she just put the phone straight down again. As you should in that situation. I'd recommend that. And so the phone goes again, and this time you wonder whether it was this headhunter's first ever call, don't you? Second call, hello, I represent the second largest advertising agency in the country. We are aware of your work, and we're wondering whether you would come up to Goodge Street in central London and have a discussion with us about how we could further your career, something like that. So Jackie says, sure. So she, on the train, on the tube, arrives in Goodge Street, goes into the meeting. This guy sits there, and for 30 minutes, he doesn't ask her a single question. He just tells her about the job, and he's got an offer letter on the table there. And as he comes into land, he turns the offer letter round, and he pushes it across the table. And he says, I've just got one question to ask you. How much money do we need to pay you for you to say yes? I have never been asked that question. And so Tim's on the phone. We are coming and we know how because we are learning to follow the promptings of the Spirit. Now, the starting of Christ Church London is not over. It has just begun. We have many more services to start. You know how the service in the East really got going? Joel Kendall, who at the time was the Christ Church London student worker, one day said to me, I'm not going to live in Kennington anymore. He said, I think I should go East. And it wasn't long before there were 20 people from Christ Church London who'd gone East. And the week before Easter, there were more people at the East service than there'd been on our launch Sunday. First of the service to sort of do that. It's just going great. Why? Because someone who actually isn't even in London anymore, but just knew what his role was to get something started. Where are we going to start the next service? Anyone got any ideas? I wonder where the Spirit will direct us next. I wonder who the Spirit will speak to next. I wonder who will say, my turn to go, and to trust that 20 will get round me, and then there'll be 160, and then there'll be 200, and then we'll be asking, where do we go again? Because this kingdom thing is all about giving away what you've got, and you get more. It's the only way you do it. This city teaches you the way you get more is get, save, and get some more. Actually, you get, you give away, you get some more. Who's up for the adventure? Let's learn, and we've got a wonderful opportunity over these next few weeks to listen to the whispers, the promptings, the directions of the Spirit. Learn to follow. And see how things unfold as a result. Let's stand together, shall we? Rich is going to lead us in a song. Let's use it as a prayer. And ask for the Spirit's presence amongst us.
Thank you for listening. For more information or for further podcasts and downloads, please visit christchurchlondon.org.